8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
Well, all right, guys, let's welcome Tucker Rule from Thursday and LS Dunes to the Talk to Me podcast here at Knotfest.com. Tucker, how are we doing this fine morning?
Doing great, doing great. Nice to talk to you.
So you played the rave last night, I'm seeing, if the internet tells me correctly.
I did. We played the rave in Milwaukee. We love playing there. And we did get access to the haunted pool, which is great.
Did you do any kind of filming down there and make sure there's no paranormal activity?
I did not have my ghost goggles on down there, but I did write on the wall. I did write my name on the wall. So
nice.
I'm trying to haunt that place via ink.
I played there like 20 years ago, and I don't think we got access to it, but I think I snuck down and was in the dark for a long time. So I don't really know. I didn't see anything though.
That's the thing. Same with me. I played there a bunch of years ago, and we always had to kind of break in to go see it. And that was always cooler. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It felt like you were doing something wrong. But now they just kind of like open the door for it and they're like, oh, here's the pool.
They open the door and turn the lights on. And you're like, this is not fun.
Yeah. Let's turn this back on. All the ghosts away. Yeah.
let's dive into LS Dunes, man. Kind of talk to me about how this came together, who called who first, and just, I mean, obviously a pandemic thing and all that good stuff. So just kind of a little history on getting this super group together, as everybody's calling it.
So as the pandemic was, you know, kind of sticking around, and it seemed apparent that it wasn't going anywhere, I was kind of having, like, you know, issues with wanting to play music. You know, I just wanted to write music and I wanted to record music. And so I built a studio in my garage. I have a detached garage from my house, and
fancy,
you know. And I figured out, I like watched a bunch of YouTube videos, learned what to buy to start recording, and I asked a bunch of friends. So I had the means to do a little remote recording. So I kind of was talking to my manager about just starting something up, and, you know, he's like, just do it. So I called Frank, and, you know, I called Tim, and my manager suggested Travis, and I was like, oh my God, that's an amazing idea. I totally want to work with Travis. And then, you know, from there, we kind of wrote a bunch of demos, and then we sent like 4 or 5 demos to Anthony. Didn't tell him who was playing on it. You know, I was just like, oh, it's a couple of friends of mine, you know, would you mind singing over some of these songs? And he said, sure. And sure enough, the first song that we wrote as a band was the first song that he chose to sing over, which is a song called Antibodies. So it just kind of worked. But yeah, my manager and I kind of got the ball rolling on that. But then the passion kind of took over with everyone, and everyone kind of was all in.
Yeah, I mean, as of like, I was kind of looking at the members of the band, and it's not like you got like the touring guitar player of this one band. I mean, you got like original founding members of like all these just like legendary bands together. I guess talk a little bit about your history with some of the guys like Frank and kind of how, you know, how easy it was for you just to reach out to them.
Oh man, like, so we took Coheed on their first tour. And we just thought they were this amazing band from upstate New York, and like the singer had this crazy voice, and all the music with, you know, the rhythm section was super tight. The guitar playing was like so crisp, and they were young. They were like, you know, early 20s, and, you know, and so we took them on the first tour, and back in the day, you know, I'm sure you feel the same way when you make these, you know, friendships early on, they stay with you for a long time. Yeah. And even through touring, because like Travis, Anthony, and Frank, like when your band starts to pick up a little steam, you go from hanging out and doing tours together to doing tours with other people, and then you kind of spread. And it could be years before you come back and see each other at a festival again. So, you know, I just feel like the same with Circa. You know, we did many tours with Circa back in the day. I played drums for My Chemical Romance on a tour in 2008, and Circa was the opener. So it's just, there's just many like formations of us hanging out. And then I actually ended up in 2018 doing a record with Frank and the Future Violence. So we knew that we played together and spoke the same kind of musical language, if you will. So I just knew that, you know, if I got Frank involved, like, it's going to work as far as like creating something, whether it's going to be good or not, who knows? I just knew it would gel.
I think that's the one people don't understand about touring is when you're on tour with a band, you know, even if you're different styles or whatnot, I mean, you're seeing them every day, you know, green room, even at the, you know, you guys happen to stop at the same gas station. I mean, the stories you guys end up having don't even have to do with like the actual shows. You know, you've got like some crazy roadie that happened to fight a guy at the bar. You know, you've got all those stories that people may or may not know. And those kind of, you know, those friendships last forever. And I mean, even when I started the show, oh God, 7 years ago now, I mean, my first 10 episodes were people I toured with and all I did, you know, hey man, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. Do you mind coming on? And, you know, and they were pretty big names still. And they were like, oh yeah, man, you were always cool. Let's do this type of stuff. So those things last, man.
Absolutely, man. And it's crazy too, because you're all doing the same exact thing at the same time, even though you're in different bands. You're all going through the same thing. You know, back in the day, you're all, you know, stopping at payphones to make phone calls. You know what I mean? You're in Europe and you're trying to buy a calling card to call home. Like, we're all going through the same struggle. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, man. I guess talk a little bit about, you know, kind of how the song started to come together. I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, getting together with Frank and those guys. Are these kind of your brainchild songs? Are they, you know, riffs from everybody? Like, how did those come together?
They're riffs from everybody. I mean, speaking of Antibodies, the first song that we kind of wrote, you know, we didn't know what we were going to sound like. You know, yeah. I was just like, somebody send a riff, and Travis just sent this riff, and I was like, oh, this is sick. Let me put drums to it. And I put drums to it, and then Frank added something, Tim added bass, you know, so everything was built. You know, because, you know, I'm sure I should probably say this, like, we wrote none of these songs together. They were all written in lockdown, separate, you know, our own separate kind of home studios. So we didn't know what the band was going to sound like. We didn't really discuss it. We kind of just was like, we decided that we'd work on every single riff that came through. You know what I mean? Like, everything got seen until it didn't work or it worked. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, because we didn't want to have we weren't going for a sound. We weren't going for something that we thought people would like. We just were going for something that was like immediate and struck us right off the bat. Because when you're writing songs remote, I think it's important to, you got to stay fast. You got to go quick because you want to keep the other people engaged as well. Like, if Tim's waiting to put a bass line down, I want to get him the drums as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I know he's, we all have kids. You know, so everybody's got limited time to work on their stuff.
Right.
So I think starting from, you know, like, doing things quick really gave us that kind of youthful energy that we had when we created our records back in the day. You know, like, first gut instinct, you know, like, not overthinking, you know, just getting in there, having fun, and giving someone like a base, you know, a palette to color on, you know.
Was Tim always your choice for bass? Do you guys have like that just connection that you've grown over the years, or were you like, I don't want another member of Thursday, or like how did you go about that?
I wanted monsters in this band. You know what I mean? I wanted fucking monsters, and there's no bigger monster than Tim. I mean, like, he's one of the best musicians I've ever played with. His hands are like two of mine. You know, he's just built to bass. You know what I mean? Right. Dude is built to bass, and he's intuitive, and he's just smart, and he actually kind of took over the arrangement portion of the band. Like, he was taking the riffs and the songs and moving them around and doing all this stuff in Pro Tools and kind of shaping the song. So it's like he took on the role of kind of like the arranger engineer, which was kind of rad to see. But yeah, he's intuitive, he's smart, crafty, and I don't have to worry about what I'm playing.
Right.
Because I know he's going to make it better. You know what I mean? Right. He's going to fill in the gaps, and he's just amazing.
Do you need to grab a drink?
Sure.
Oh, no, I didn't know if you had one with you. Oh.
This is just morning breath.
Oh, I know. the morning voice, you know, when I was in high school, man, right out of high school, had a voicemail pager. And I would always re-record my voice message first thing in the morning, because it's like when your voice sounds the coolest, you know, like kind of
raspy. Yeah. A little bit raspy.
Yeah, you reach to me, leave a message.
Yeah. Get done smoking that morning cigarette too. You know, you got it.
Right. The kind of getting this, when was the first time you guys all got in the same room together? Was it like recording the video? Was it like first tour rehearsal? Like, when was the first time you guys kind of got together?
Well, we got together at Frank's house, probably about, I don't know, 6 months after we started wrote that first song. You know what I mean? And we kind of did it because we wanted to do like a little bit of pre-production, but we also wanted to make sure that playing these songs together gave us the same feeling as mm-hmm. listening to the songs, because you can make a great song, right? You can do something that you're psyched on, but if you get in a room together and it just doesn't gel, or it's just boring, you know what I mean? Or your hair doesn't stand up, then like, in my mind, why fucking do it?
Right.
So, you know, we had to make sure that everything was like, oh, this is cool, you know, and we kicked into that first note and everyone was like beamed, you know what I mean? So it's like, okay, this is awesome, you know? And then, you know, so we spent the day at Frank's just kind of going over stuff and making sure that stuff that we couldn't do separate, we could do together. Like, there was parts of songs that needed a little bit tie up at the end, or a bridge needed a little bit fixing. So we made sure to get in there and kind of get those things to a point where when we do go to the studio, we have, you know, a more solidified part than previously. And yeah, and through that as well, we kind of had a bunch of more riffs, because we're the type of band that we are setting up and somebody starts playing a riff, I'll put a drum beat to it and Anthony will immediately start singing.
Right.
You know, so stuff happens very quickly and we're like, ooh, let's do that again and record it and go, we'll check it out, we'll hit that later, you know. And so it that kind of stuff is always great when you're together with the band. And then fast forward a few months later, we went to a studio near my house in New Jersey called SST. We'll talk actually called Ewe Studio, but it's in a building called SST where they do a bunch of rentals. And that's when we kind of like did like professional pre-production. And through that, we wrote the last song we ever wrote was this song called Sleep Cult. And the one before that was Permanent Rebellion. So those are the last two songs that were written, and they were written in like a minute. Like, as quick as it was to figure out the riff, that's how the drums came in. It was like Frank on the microphone cueing changes, you know what I mean? Just kind of intuitively listening to one another, like, okay, the bass is going to change here, I know it. And it sure shit did, you know what I mean? So like, that stuff is really cool when that happens. And you know that you're getting this like beautiful, simplistic energy, trap it in a bottle, you know, as best you can. And Frank even said, like, the best songs always come at the end. So like, I have this riff, should we work on it? And it's like, yes, absolutely. Let's work on it. Let's see what happens. You know, we have time, you know. And Permanent Rebellion came out of that. And that's the first song that we actually released to the public.
Yeah, great songs. The Sleep Cult is one that when it first came on, I was like, ooh. Like, it had like that Sleepwalkers kind of feel to it. You know, it's kind of got that eeriness to it, man. I immediately gravitated to that one, and that's kind of one of my go back to songs on the album.
Awesome. Thank you.
And the one that you talked about there, and I've talked about this on the podcast a lot too, is you know, the Pro Tools and all that stuff, and being able to send files is great, but just being able to get in a room and play music with your friends is completely different. And then you, like you said, you know, someone will be just like trying to dial in their amp and they'll hit a couple of chords and you're like, what was that? Do that again. And you're like, what are you talking about, man? I'm just tuning or something, you know? And that's those riffs, you know, that you don't get when you're just sending files over the internet.
Totally. Totally. And yeah, that there's a certain magic that you can capture when you are alone and listening to something and putting the perfect drum part or the perfect mm-hmm. guitar riff to it. But it's not as fun as the magic, especially me coming from like the punk hardcore scene. Like, I'm used to like capturing all this, like in a room together, a tiny room together where we're literally like breathing the same exact shitty air, you know, like, and having a moment, you know? So it's, you can get some stuff done remote, which is a brand new way to do things. Like, I've never done stuff that way, really. So it was there was a series of firsts in this band, and you know, writing songs together as a band separate was definitely a first.
How were the first few shows? I know like you did like Aftershock and a few festivals, things like that. How was that just walking out basically to a blank canvas to for everyone to see for the first time? How were those shows for you guys?
They were really nerve-wracking. I mean, the first one we did was Riot Fest, and we played at 1 p.m. So the expectation for us was super low, you know, because 1 p.m, I know there's a line of people outside waiting to get in, you know, not to see our band, you know what I mean, to get into the festival in general. So, right. You know, I was like, oh, there's probably going to be like 47 people out there. It's going to be whatever. but
all
we weren't
all spaced out too, like just 47 yeah. random people.
But we were okay with that because we just wanted to play the songs. We wanted to, you know, when you start a new band, it's a challenge to get up there and figure out how to move to these songs. You know what I mean? Like everybody, you know, you kind of get in the groove of what happens in this part. How do I move to this part? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so we didn't know any of that yet because we had only played together like 3 times in total before that first show. So I always say this, the thing that made that show so special was that people showed up super early. Like a lot of people showed up super early just to see our band, which is mind blowing. But then also like we played at 1 p.m. So we didn't have to think about it all day. We didn't have time right. to freak out about, you know, this, that, and the other thing. It was like, wake up, have your coffee, get your breakfast. And like, oh shit, we got to get to stage. You know what I mean? So there was no like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, you know, for all day.
Right.
You know, cause that's my least favorite thing about being a musician and being in a band is like playing at 10 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Cause at like 8, I'm ready to go. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and I'm like, what do I do with myself? And then it's like 9:55 and I'm like, can we go on 5 minutes early? Can we go on now? Like, I want to go. I want to fucking go. I don't want to think about this anymore.
Yeah. I kind of want to hit on a little bit of nostalgia. I mean, you guys, you know, growing up around, like you said, taking Coheed out on one of their first tours, and obviously Jeff's connection with My Chemical Romance, and I'm sure you were around that whole time too. And just seeing those bands, obviously Thursday's in that group too, but just seeing your friends become My Chemical Romance and become Coheed and Cambria, it had to have been nuts for you to kind of watch all of that over the years.
Totally, man, because like again, like especially with MCR, these were kids that came to see us play,
right?
You know what I mean? Like Gerard was just a comic book kid that I was introduced to, like right. like this is Gerard, he's cool, you know, and Jeff and he like got on the comic book tip and whatnot. So and then I always liked hanging out with Frank, you know, he was just a cool dude, mm-hmm. you know, and he's remained the same exact cool dude through being just Frank to from MCR, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like he's the same exact person, which is wild because you know, the success is seeing them on their last tour and being able to be there and play some shows on that tour. It was just like, literally like seeing the Beatles.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they walk around and it's like, they get attacked like the Beatles. It's fucking wild.
Yeah, I'm sure when you're playing the LS Dune set, you can kind of look out and you see the Frank kids and you can see, you know, the Coheed fans. And
oh, yeah.
It's pretty funny, man.
Yeah. Anyone with not their own hair color, I'm like, oh, Frank, there's your people.
Well, you said you filled in for some My Chemical Romance shows. But, you know, you talked about kind of the Beatle aspect of that thing. But I mean, the production and the music and things like that. I mean, it's got to be pretty nuts to kind of just sit back and kind of, you know, I guess be the one kind of triggering all that, man. Just being, you know, playing drums for that.
Dude, it was wild. It was back in 2007, I think. And their drummer at the time had bad carpal tunnel in his mm-hmm. wrist. And they were like, hey, can you do this tour? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. knew not a lot of information about it. Didn't know what they were running or what the, you know, I just knew the tour was huge. And,
yeah.
I was like, yeah, sure. No problem. And you know, about 2 days before I was supposed to leave, their drummer calls me. And he's like, hey, don't worry about it. I got this. I'm going to do it. Like I'm better. And I was like, oh, all right, bummer. But like, I'm glad you're okay. Cause like, again, these are my friends, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't want him to be hurt. Right. I don't want him to not have his job, you know what I mean? But you know, I want to play drums for them, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? But you know, that him being okay and playing in his own band is more important. So I'm like, all right. So I book myself a flight to go visit my, at that time, girlfriend in Colorado. So I land in Colorado and I get all these messages, all these missed calls. And it's this dude, Jeff Pereira, who's basically was like the stage manager of the band. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey dude, he's like, where are you at? He's like, I need you to fly to Australia. He's like, Bob can't even pick up his bags. Like his hands are, his right. wrist is so fucked. So I literally like turned around and went back to the Colorado airport with a backpack to fly to Australia.
Love it.
So I didn't have any clothes. I didn't have anything. I didn't have my in-ears. I didn't have anything. So I had to have my mom send the ears. I had to, you know, fly, meet them. My suitcase didn't get there in time, whatever, that I had my mom pack basically. And I go to the arena or whatever, and we have this little backstage room, and they're like, all right, we're going to rehearse here. And like, so we just start going through the songs. Right. And everything was working cool. You know, we were firing on the right cylinders. So we're like, okay, sick. The next day was the show. So I show up to sound check. There's a fucking computer back there. There's a fire. Right. And I had no idea that the show was like, you know, on a grid.
Yeah.
And I was triggering the song. So I had to learn what on the set list I had to write, like, oh, voice four count. Then I hit the hi-hats, you know, like 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, because right. Everything was tempo mapped. So it was just kind of shocking to not even know that. And then to step up there and there's, you know, however many 20,000 people or 15,000 people in the audience that are going to watch the show and like expect to see the songs the way they are intended. So
yeah, this is right. And that's like height of the Black Parade too. Like it's either the height or it's becoming the height of the Black Parade in 2007.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was wild. It was a lot of fun and it was a great learning experience. I love that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? I love the challenge of like throwing myself into these type of situations because it keeps your brain sharp. That's why I wanted to write music over the pandemic, because I wanted to sharpen my brain. I wanted to like be able to crack the code on songs, which is my favorite thing, is like figuring out that the theme of the song drum wise, like the fill, got to repeat that fill. This is the song is built for me on drums around this certain fill. And I repeat that, everything else goes around it. You know what I mean? I like cracking the code. So cracking the code of like learning other people's songs is just as fun to me.
And you guys are out right now with Thursday doing the Full Collapse 21 year anniversary. Thank you, pandemic, for those weird anniversaries we're getting now. I was thinking back to it, man. I saw Thursday on the Full Collapse tour, and it was at a club in Nashville called The End, and it was like a Monday or a Tuesday. It was early in the week, and it was like right when the album was either hitting or like there was just a murmur about Thursday. And I remember going to the show and going, either there's going to be no one here or it's going to be sold out and crazy. Like it was kind of like that weird period of the band kind of on the rise, you know, and we show up, man, and it is sold out. It's probably the best show I ever saw at that club.
Oh, awesome.
And just the energy in the place was crazy. And just to see you guys that early on at such a small dive bar. I mean, it was a small dive bar. There wasn't, you know, what you guys are doing now, obviously, but it was just that perfect time to see a band like on the rise, you know.
Oh, that's rad, man. And it's crazy too, because Nashville back then especially wasn't really a market that was known for having good shows in our genre. So it was always a crapshoot. Thankfully now it's come back as like a place to go and play, you know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, dude, it was, yeah, those shows were a lot of fun. I remember that era.
Right. What does Full Collapse mean to you, man? Because I mean, I was listening to it again yesterday and just kind of going back, and I mean, I grew up listening to, like, you know, if you've ever watched the show, I mean, obviously I'm working for Knotfest and all that other stuff, so I grew up listening to Metallica and Megadeth and Slayer, but I also love Sunny Day Real Estate and all those bands too. And so when Thursday came out, I'm like, oh, I get this 100%. So I mean, what were you guys kind of listening to at the time, and what does the album mean to you? Obviously that's two very different questions.
Well, no, I mean, first of all, like, stuff I was listening to back then was definitely like Quicksand, Slip, one of my favorite records of all time, one of my favorite bands of all time. You know, I just really loved Deftones' White Pony, kind of hit around that time, and At the Drive-In's Relationship of Command, and of course Sunny Day,
everything.
Of course Sunny Day, and of course like fucking Metallica and Slayer, you know, all that stuff. You know, I kind of grew up as a skateboarder, so I learned all of my music from like Thrasher magazine and stuff like that, and like getting into a cluster in my school of skateboarders, and then we would go on weekends to shows, like hardcore shows and stuff like that. So you know, I was definitely influenced by a band called Ink and Dagger, which was like this Philly band. They fucking wore face paint. They were the scariest band I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
You know, so that's what we were kind of listening to back then. But then, like, what does Full Collapse mean to me? It's like, it was a life changer. It's like, you know, I'll always be forever grateful for that record. And it's one of those things that, like, I didn't know I was going to be grateful for it. You know, we didn't write it to get it on TV. We were just literally kids writing these songs that honestly had no idea that there would be any sort of impact whatsoever, ever. We started this band to play in Jeff, our singer's basement, because he had all kinds of bands coming through, like At the Drive-In, like Saves the Day, like Hot Water Music. They would all tour through and play this fucking basement that held like 100 kids. and it was definitely illegal and against code and not OSHA approved.
Right.
But we started a band to play in his basement, you know, so that's literally was the goal.
Yeah, I just had Justin Foley of Killswitch on the other day, and he was talking about playing basement shows. And he was talking about back in the day when he used to have like the big ass drum kit, because that's the one that even you know, I love when a drummer can get up there with just a small kit and just kill. And Justin's one of those dudes that he's in Killswitch Engage. He should have 30 kick drums and a gong and everything else, but he gets up there with a small kit and just, you know, just
tiny toms.
Right. Yeah. But he was talking about playing basement shows and like having to get that rack down the steps and stuff, and just all those great old school, you know, stories about basement shows. Gotta love those.
Oh yeah, it's one of those things where you're loading in and you're like, why are we doing this? Why the fuck are we doing this? This is crazy. And then this show starts and there's nothing like it.
Right.
There's bodies everywhere, people are upside down. It's like, dude, this is someone's house.
Yeah, one of the first tours they ever did, we show up to this address and it's a house. We're like, why are we at a house? And the guy's parents were renovating the house. So basically they got some free demo out of the work because they were like, just do whatever you want. And we're like, yeah. All right. You
know, people jumping crazy through the drywall.
Yeah. they just got free demo out of the whole thing, man. One thing about Full Collapse too, and just you in general, man, just listening to the album, how driven by Thursday the drums, you know, are, I guess, or Thursday is driven by the drums. You know, a lot of those songs, the catchy part to me was your drum patterns or the little fills here and there and things like that, man. So I guess just, you know, kind of go into like writing drums, you know, like what do you do when you sit down to like, you know, this is what I'm going to do this part. You know, what goes through your brain?
Well, again, this all goes back to Tim, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was never a person to write to the bass because I never had to, because Tim, I knew he was going to do something sick. So I would always write to the guitar riff, you know, if the riff was angular, I was going to try to match that, you know, think of something a little left of center, you know, to make it interesting. And then Tim would just come in with this fucking monster bass line. So, and even back then, like I really got into like thinking about the drum parts and like dissecting them. Like when I wasn't playing them, I would be like laying in bed, staring at the ceiling, thinking about how I could slim them down and shave them and mold them into something. And again, like it was back then that I kind of learned that, oh, drums should have a theme. There should be, you know, like understanding a car crash starts with that blap, blap. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm going to do that, repeat that throughout the whole song. That's going to be the marker. It's going to start, you know, with that, and it's going to go throughout the song. And I don't know, I just really liked, maybe, you know, I love containers. I love putting things in containers that everything has a place. And yeah. The fills are definitely like me putting something in a container. You know what I mean? Like, I like the neatness of it. So I try to approach, you know, always writing drums to the riff. and then, you know, if I can, if the singer has vocals already and there's a cadence, figure out a fill to match the vocal or something like that. But if not, I just literally repeat fills just to make it easy to signify that the next part is coming. So everyone has an easy time of doing it. Also, like, I want people to air drum, you know, right. I mean? Everybody fucking air drums. So you want to write those riffs and those drum parts that people are like going to play along to in their car.
Yeah, and you've definitely accomplished that over your career. As we kind of wind down here, man, what's the future for LS Dunes? Like we know, Past Lives is out now, so make sure you guys are checking that out. You know, just what are the future going?
I mean, we're definitely writing new music. We have a bunch of new songs ready to go, ready to be like, you know, hashed out. So. I mean, we're definitely writing some more. LS Dunes has a tour in the UK and Europe at the end of January into February. And basically, we're just playing around with everybody's schedules and trying to, you know, come up with some cool stuff that we can do between our other jobs, if you will. But yeah, we definitely have more stuff coming out. And we definitely look forward to bringing these songs to more people, especially after this last tour that we had. It was just absolutely amazing, and I can't even believe how much fun I had as a 44-year-old man starting a new band. You know what I mean? It was like literally like blew my mind. So yeah. And I think it blew all of our minds, and it really solidified that this is a full-time band, and this is something that we want to, you know, kind of get after, because I feel like we owe it to ourselves because we worked really hard on it, and we owe it to the people who have literally jumped on from minute one and you know, made their own art, got tattoos, all this stuff. So it's just, it's been, I don't know, it music should always, you know, music has given me a lot over the course of my life, and I've given my lot to a lot to music, and I feel like we're doing this ping pong thing back and forth that is really like scratching the itch of some of my favorite stuff I've ever done.
Yeah, I'm 43, and the thought of starting a band right now is the most just furthest thing from my brain. Like, I'm just like, I don't want to deal with people's schedules. I don't want to deal with people's girlfriends or wives. I can't. I don't want to do it, man.
Dude, could you imagine? You know what I mean?
Like, it sounds terrifying. It sounds
especially
awful.
During a pandemic where everyone's like, "Oh, you should get a job. You should start working for Amazon or something because like music is dead. You're never going to come back." So it's like, okay, what do I do? Start a fucking band. You know what I mean? That's my like go to for everything. Like, oh, you're in trouble, start a band. Oh, you're sick, start a band. that's the cure to every ailment.
hey babe, I think our DoorDash guy was the drummer from Thursday.
exactly.
Well, Tucker, man, good luck out there on the road. Make sure everybody going to check out the Full Collapse 21 year anniversary shows, and then the LS Dunes when you guys are out on tour. Also, man, this has been a fun conversation. You know, go brush your teeth, get back to sleep, you know, or go back to sleep, whatever you want to do, man.
Hey, man, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, man. It's always great to talk to people, so I appreciate talking to you.
Awesome, man. Take care.
You too.
The Talk To Me podcast, presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.